Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Power. You're listening to BBSRadio.com, and we are on from 3 to 4 every afternoon, and it's always a delight to share with you the many people we have as guests. Also, I want to give to you your toll-free telephone number of 877-876-5227 that you'll be able to use later on in the hour. And remember, that will be a toll-free number for you no matter where you are in this wonderful country of ours or in the world. We have a very special guest this afternoon. Feather Schwartz Foster is my guest, and she has a fun book that's titled Ladies, A Conjecture of Personalities. And Feather, you're with us now. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling from New Jersey.
From New Jersey. Now, Feather, this book, first of all, I have to tell you, I love the cover. To see a lady's hat on top of the White House is just absolutely wonderful. And it absolutely personifies the subject matter of your book, which is all about the first ladies of the United States. But I want to know a little bit more about Feather Schwartz Foster. How did you ever become a presidential historian? And this is a hobby of yours.
This is a hobby of mine.
Well, how did you ever get involved in that? And exactly what is a presidential historian? Give us all that.
Well, I like history. I have always liked history. And I've always been a reader. I have a lot of books I love to read, always have. And I got into doing it kind of by accident about 35 or so years ago. It was not long after I got married. And we had bought our first house, and I was fixing up a little library room, sort of half office for my husband, and et cetera, et cetera. And I decided I had to start organizing some of my books, otherwise I'd never find anything. And I did bios, and I found that I had maybe a half a dozen or eight or so different presidential bios, you know, Lincoln, Washington, Theodore Roosevelt, FDR, a Kennedy, you know, the
mm-hmm.
normal ones.
Mm-hmm.
And one not so normal, and that was I had a McKinley book, which was kind of interesting, and I was reading them. I did read them. And so I was putting the presidential ones together, and I started collecting more and more of them. When I moved to the house that we live in now, which was about 25 years ago, I had about 60-some-odd presidential books, which I kept separate. That
mm-hmm.
was separate.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I wanted to have a book on every single president, quote, before I died, and I planned on living a pretty long life. Well, you know how fast I got that?
Oh my!
Real
goodness.
Fast. Real
wow.
fast. And now I have over 1,000.
Over 1,000 volumes
yeah.
on the individual
president. And then there are a couple of hundred more on associated topics like the White House and First Ladies
mm-hmm.
and elections and all. And then I have about another almost 100 on social history of the USA.
Now, here you are. You obviously have a passion for reading, which I can
love
really
it.
Equate with. My husband often teases me, saying, we're going to have to buy a house so it'll
mm-hmm.
be a library.
Oh,
I
yes.
I absolutely have a passion for books. To me, they're more valuable than gold. I just love them.
I do, too.
And I can totally understand, with the particular interest you have, your passion for them. I want to ask you a question, because
sure.
when people are looking at history, whoever writes history about anyone or any situation, they're always going to be adding their own particular perceptions and observations. And we all have our own biases. When you were reading these materials, did you find that you had to weed out the biases of different individuals, their attitudes?
I wasn't doing it to weed out biases. I read once some rather serious historian, or I read heavy, write light. That's sort of my thing.
Mm-hmm.
That they said, if you are a biographer, you have to have a point of view. You have to have a point of view. That's one of the reasons I don't write about any of the first ladies from Mrs. Kennedy on forward. I only go up to the Eisenhowers,
mm-hmm.
because I like history, not current events. And it's my own personal belief that a president and or first lady needs to be dead for maybe 50 years or so before you can really evaluate them properly. In the case of the Kennedys, I always make an exception. I think they'll have to be dead 100 years.
Now, why do you think that that's the case with them especially? Do you think it's because so much is held so secret?
No. I think it's... I know this is going to boggle a lot of people's mind, but Jack Kennedy is dead almost 42 years now,
mm-hmm.
almost 43 years.
That's
hard to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
The dust hasn't settled, and it's not a question of secrecy or anything else like that. Most of the time, in a case certainly of a young president, and he was young when he died. It wasn't like he was 80 years old then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Books that are being written about them are being written by people who have access to people they knew. And they would be asking and interviewing people who knew Kennedy and or any of the other presidents. You know, that you're interviewing people who knew them very, very well. And either they liked them or they didn't like them. If you find a book now that's written about Jefferson, he's not interviewing anybody who knew Jefferson. He is delving in and being able to ferret out what is true, what isn't true. What is somebody's opinion, what isn't somebody's opinion, and to try to come up with something a little bit more unbiased and realistic. I kind of like that myself. In the book that I wrote, you know, Ladies, A Conjecture of Personalities,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get into the biases. I wanted to let them sort of speak out themselves and have a really good time.
Well, that is the truth. Now, there is on the back of your book
yes.
a statement. It's chatty, it's catty, it's fun, it's informative, it's a must read for anyone interested in history. And I love what you have done in your book because you bring out a lot of points that when we're looking at history, I think it's so difficult for us to step out of our own particular modes of thinking. You know, we women have our own positionings today, and when we read about women in history, too frequently I'll hear people say, well, they really were stupid then. It wasn't a matter of stupidity. We have to really be able to put ourselves in that environment and understand what they were living at the time. They didn't have microwave ovens and automobiles to drive and opportunities for education. There was the world that Lucy Hayes went through, Mamie Eisenhower, Mrs. Jefferson, all of these different women throughout history, especially the first ladies, because they were so much in the forefront of everyone's attention, but just the times they came through.
That's right.
Utterly fascinating. And in your book, you will let them speak, and then you have all of these comments made
yeah.
by maybe Betty Ford
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Barbara Bush
yes.
or someone else. And it's fascinating. It's really quite interesting.
I let the first ladies from Martha up to Mamie Eisenhower write their own chapters. But then everybody, and that includes all the first ladies, the modern first ladies up through Mrs. Clinton, they can all participate in commentary. And
mm-hmm.
they can bring out, if I just ended it with Mamie and didn't bring in the modern, there would be such a gaping hole, it wouldn't work. We have to get the modern point of view, too, because they can help, they help pivot things, they help bring things into focus. And help also to bring in, you know, any of the major issues that have to be discussed.
Now, my guest today is Feather Schwartz Foster. And as you're listening to us chat, you're going to wonder what book we're talking about. Well, she has written a delightful book about the first ladies of the United States. And it's called Ladies, A Conjecture of Personalities. And there's so many wonderful positionings of attitude. And let's start off with Martha Washington.
Okay.
Now, she was born in 1731, and she passed away in 1802, so she lived a fair amount of years for her time.
That's right.
And she was the first lady from 1789 to 1797. Tell us about Martha.
Well, I think the first thing, other than the fact that she was truly a very colonial woman, in
mm-hmm.
a very... She was a very conventional woman. All our first ladies basically were very, very conventional women, women of their times. And Martha was 58 years old when she became first lady. And that is something that people kind of overlook. A lot of our first ladies were into their 50s or so when they became first lady. 58-year-old women don't change much. They're pretty well established of who they are and how they think. And when she became first lady and when George Washington became president, they hadn't a clue of how were they supposed to behave. There were absolutely no precedents. The only thing that our country or any country knew for thousands of years were monarchies or quasi-monarchies,
yes.
You know, like a grand duchy or principalities
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
something, where you had a central ruler who made all the laws and you had to do what he said. And all of a sudden we have this whole new kind of a government, and Martha says to George, well, what am I supposed to do? And he says, I don't know, Martha, what do you want to do? You know? They don't know what to do. They don't
mm-hmm.
know how to behave, and they have to walk a very fine line, particularly Martha, because if she is too aloof and she's too remote, then people will think that she is putting on airs and that she's very monarchical and she's trying to be queen or something, which she certainly wasn't about to do. And yet, if she is too, the Virginia way of entertaining, which is a lot less formal, warm, hospitable, answer the door yourself, come on in, you want something to eat. And then if she is that way, they'll say that she's too familiar and not suitable, you know, to be first lady. She doesn't have the right, you know, dignity or whatever. It's a very, very fine line. And people watched her constantly, you know, all the Philadelphia and the New York, the paparazzi of the day. And they would be watching where she going and what she wearing and what kind of carriage did she drive and how many horses were there and did she have a coachman and a footman and a this and a that and who'd she talk to and who'd she just nod to or who didn't she talk to. Martha did not like that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't like it at all.
And that's exactly what the first ladies have to go through even today.
Yes, they do.
It's something that is just standard because the wife
fishbowl.
Of the president.
It's a fishbowl.
Yes, and you're definitely going to be in that fishbowl.
Yes,
there's just
is.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But as you say, with Marcia, she was Martha. She was put into this.
Yes, she was.
Without any education or knowledge. And George, the two of them got married when she was 27.
Yeah.
They both were about the same age.
Yes.
And I loved the way you presented the fact that women at the time, in that time frame, in the 18th century, typically, there was not the romance involved. You might get lucky. They weren't quite arranged marriages in the way that we think of arranged marriages, like among the East Indians or among, you know, various cultures
sure.
in the world. But yet they were arranged because there was the financial position. That was very European. I mean, that was something in Europe that was very much practiced. People were married for economic reasons.
In the colonies, in colonial times, people married for ease of living. And that's really the best way I can put it. Spouses needed spouses. Living was hard. Most of the people in the country, the men were property owners, or they were farmers, or they had little shops, or something of that nature. And they had to earn the living. Women had to run the house. And when you talked about women's work, it was really work. You want clean clothes? Fine, let's make the soap. You want clothes, period. Let's weave the cloth. You want light in the place. We have to make the candles. So there was a tremendous amount of cottage industry that had to be made for ease of living. You had to have spouses working together with spouses, and they didn't really have the romantic notions that we did. And if you got somebody who was kind to you and nice to you and not too bad to look at and didn't smell too horrible and had decent teeth, you know, and all, then you consider yourself fortunate, you know, that they were good to you and that they did their duty toward each other.
Yes, and a lot of times people don't realize that the difficulty of people living in those early years here in this country were so difficult that many, many women died.
Many women died
before they were even 20 years old because many of them got pregnant. They were married young. They got pregnant, and conditions were extremely harsh. Disease, sanitation.
Childbirth was a serious, serious medical condition.
Yes.
And a lot of women died. A lot of babies. Infant mortality was very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
And if a woman didn't die in actual childbirth, she might die from over childbirth. You know,
yes.
People would have 10, 12, 14 children in as many years.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they just get worn out.
That's
and
it.
they would die from over childbirth. They would pick up in secondary infections afterwards and never really, you know, maybe they lived for 8 or 10 months after they had a baby, but they were never well.
Right.
Well,
they were never
very
well.
Very serious condition.
It was. And two, let's move ahead a little bit. Let's go to Mary Todd Lincoln. And Mary Lincoln, I think, is a woman that has been so misunderstood over the years. But, of course, where we are today with our understanding of depression and chemical deficiencies, they didn't have a clue about this at this time. And Mary Todd Lincoln was a woman where there was as much myth about her as I would say truth known. Because she was a person that I think was so very, very private. And like you mentioned before with Martha, when she came into this positioning, she just didn't have a clue about what to do. Mary really, though she was somewhat prepared for the responsibilities, the stress with her children and everything else, she just didn't have anybody in her world. Tell us about Mary. Now, she was born
in
1818. Let me just stop for just a minute. 1818 to 1882, and she was first lady at 1861 to 1865. I apologize for interrupting you, but I wanted
to bring that
up. No,
that's okay. She was in her early to mid-40s when she was first lady. And she came from a very nice background. She had gone to finishing school. Her father was. She came from Kentucky, and her father was a well-to-do planter. She had education. She had breeding. She had all the nice traits. She had a lot. When she came to the White House, when she came to Washington in 1861, it was Washington D.C. was a Southern town. Period, and it had a lot of Southern influence in its social structure. And when Mary came there, to the Southerners, she was a Westerner because she was from Kentucky and lived in Illinois for 20 years. She was a Westerner. To the Northerners, Mary was a Southerner. So she was sort of in no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody trusted her. Nobody liked her. She came from a large family. It was sort of a mixed family because her father had married twice. Mary's mother died when Mary was about 8 or 9 years old, and he remarried. I think she had about 5 brothers or sisters who were full brothers and sisters, and then she had about another 5 or 7 of them that were half brothers and sisters. And she had a lot of them, brothers who fought and died for the Confederacy, brothers-in-law, cousins who fought and died for the Confederacy. And Mary was not a Confederate. She was against slavery. But she did care for her family, and she wasn't even permitted to mourn when they died. She couldn't even, you know, she would find out that a brother of hers died in the war. She couldn't even wear black. You know, she had to sort of, like, mourn in secret. She would have her a few of her cousins or relatives come and visit and stay with her for a little while. Some of them were outspoken Confederates. They thought that she was harboring spies in the White House. It was a tough time for her. And Lincoln was no help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lincoln was no help to her then.
Mm-hmm.
He had enough headaches of his own. He couldn't be there for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she really had nobody.
Yes, and just all kinds of little things that you bring out about Mary Todd Lincoln. And I had to chuckle because when Nancy Reagan put in her comments, as you portray them,
mm-hmm.
She says that Mary was another candidate for Prozac.
Yeah.
And I think that Betty Ford, as you depicted Betty Ford's comment, she says, "I never believed that Mary Lincoln was the crazy woman that her contemporaries described. I do believe she had problems which today could and would be treated mm-hmm. with a high degree of success." I think so often.
Yeah.
When we look at history, it's hindsight is always something that's easy to do. And I know we're going to have people that are going to look upon a lot of the medical practices we're doing today in the future years, perhaps 20 or 30, and say, these people were barbarians. What
mm-hmm.
in the name of heaven were they doing X, Y, Z for? Because that's the stupidest thing we could have ever imagined.
That's
well,
right.
It's a progress, isn't it?
It's a progress. It's an evolution.
Yes.
And medicine has, you know, we look back 150 years ago, and of course we are right
mm-hmm.
because we are accurate. We can look at it differently. Mary, as my husband would say, Mary had issues. Mary
mm-hmm.
had issues.
Mm-hmm.
She had a lot of problems. She had a lot of things that were on her mind. She was a very, very emotional woman, always was. And she had a very hard time controlling her emotions. As soon as she felt something, it was right out her mouth, you know, bypassing brain. And
mm-hmm.
she was always getting on somebody's bad side. She was always having to backtrack a little bit and apologize a lot. She would have her flare-ups and her temper, you know, her tantrums
mm-hmm.
and everything else. She's a very difficult lady that way. And I really do believe that today, you would probably say that she could use a little, you know, chemical help.
Prozac.
Or whatever.
Nancy Reagan.
Or something, yes.
If, for those of you that may be just tuning in to this broadcast, we're talking with Feather Schwartz Foster, who has written a delightful book. If you love history, if you'd love to learn about the First Ladies of the U.S. of A., Ladies, A Conjecture of Personalities is a must-read book. It's entertaining. And she has put it into a context of not just historical information, because Feather has a real passion for history, but she gives commentary from different first ladies, because we really haven't had that many, and their positioning on different things. Now, one of my favorite is Eleanor Roosevelt. I find that she's such an intriguing woman, but we also have Mamie Eisenhower, which is the last one in your book
yes.
that you cover. Let's talk about Mamie, because I can remember when I was a little girl seeing pictures of her, and I thought, that has to be one of the dowdiest looking women I've ever seen. And I was just a little girl, and I'd go, ah. And I just remember when I'd see pictures of her, and of course her husband was a very nice looking man, and he was always in his military uniforms. He always looked so good. Whatever he wore, and I thought, gee, they just don't seem to fit together. Tell us a little bit about Mamie.
Actually, when Mamie became First Lady, everybody thought she was adorable. Everybody thought she was adorable with her little Mamie bangs, and she was small. She was about 5'4" or so, and
mm-hmm.
she was kind of petite. I mean, she was also in her 50s at the time. I mean, she was not a young kid.
Right.
Although I've seen pictures of Mamie Eisenhower when she was about 20, and I don't think anybody in the world had a waist so small. She was a tiny little thing. But anyway, after Bess Truman, who was certainly not an attractive one, she was sort of dowdy,
mm-hmm.
and Eleanor Roosevelt, who, fine lady as she was certainly no fashion plate, or she was not good looking. And Lou Hoover, who came before that, who was another one who was definitely not in the gorgeous department. Mamie was adorable. Everybody thought that, oh, wasn't she cute? And she had a very winsome smile, just like Ike. So when he grinned and she grinned, you got wall to wall teeth, you know? And so everybody thought, oh, isn't she cute? And she could wave and she could do that. But I don't care for Mamie. And you know, every biographer has to have a point of view. And I have them. And I personally don't care for Mamie because Mamie was spoiled. Mamie is a rich kid. She's a rich little girl. And she was very, very spoiled. And she didn't do much. And I think that even before Mamie, and even before Eleanor, there were a lot of first ladies who did things.
Yes, they did.
And Mamie didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very disappointed in that. As I read more and more about Mamie, the less and less she did, with no excuse for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in 1830 or 1840, if a woman didn't do anything, well, there was an excuse for it because everybody would be horrified if a woman did anything other than entertain or to be very gracious or do the social kind of stuff. But with Mamie could have done stuff, and she didn't. She should have.
Now, Ike was gone a lot because of being a military man, and, of course, we had the Second World War, and then after that.
Well, she traveled with him a lot wherever he went.
Mm-hmm.
Other than during the war. Other than during the war.
Yes, and during the war she didn't. And, of course, there's all the stories about his affair that he had and this type of thing. And, I mean, people have to report on something, and if they don't find the fact, then often they make it up.
They make it up a lot.
Yes, and that is something that I think happens so frequently. And I think if those who are really historians are willing to dig, they can separate the fact from fiction, but it takes a lot of digging. It really does.
Well, it takes a lot of digging, and it takes a lot of being able to put things. Does it sound right? Does this follow? Does it suit this person? Does everything that I know about this person jive with what somebody's trying to talk about? I read a wonderful thing when they talked about John Quincy Adams, as a matter of fact, and they would talk about Jackson said, oh, he had this corrupt bargain with Henry Clay and everything else. And the biographer said, there is no way that John Quincy Adams would have a corrupt anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was the most straightforward, honest person ever. So, you know, you have to take these type of things into consideration that a lot of people just make it up.
Well, Feather, this has been a delight. Your book is really fascinating reading, and your presentation of these women and their positionings along with the history of their times makes, again, for intriguing, informative reading. The book is titled Ladies, A Conjecture of Personalities. Feather Schwartz Foster is my guest. Feather, give us your website quickly.
www.featherfoster.com. Real easy. And
Feather
it's Feather Foster. With an F.
Featherfoster.com. With an F.
Yep.
Foster.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. I have some information I want to share with you. Feather, thank you again.
You're very, very welcome, Donna. I really appreciate being on.
It's just been a delight. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to just take a moment. I wanted to share some information with you. Also, I wanted to let you know that you are going to be able to call in and chat with me at 877-876-5227. Now, this is our brand-new international number, so if you want to call in and chat with me today, you can do that. I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of insight. And it's so easy. All you have to do is call into that toll-free number, 877-876-5227, and one of our staff will take your call, put you on hold, and then I will be able to give you information about yourself. All I need from you is your first name, your initial, and where you are calling from. And then we'll just take it from there. These are mental skills that I'm delighted to share with you. Again, to light up your life with a little bit of insight. By the way, if you'd like information about the guests that I've scheduled, you can go to my website at this time. Pretty soon I'm going to be able to put information up on the bbsradio.com website where you'll know more about my guests. But at this time you need to go into my newsletter, which is in on my website, which is DelphiInternational.com. Delphi, just like the Oracle, international.com. Now, on my website, you will find all kinds of little buttons to the left side of the screen. So you go to any one of those buttons and tap them, and wherever you want to do, whatever you'd like to research or investigate, you're going to be able to do that. But I want to take a moment to talk to you about something that has been very significant in my life. And this is something that has come to my attention this year. And it's glyconutrients. I am very much interested in nutrition. I share with you during my show all kinds of information regarding medicine, etc. But I have, in these past few months, become aware from about some new information regarding nutrition that I think you need to know about. There are 8 necessary sugars that are very important for our health. And you may or may not be aware of them, but they are sugars that the body has to have so that we can enjoy good health. It really makes a difference about how we are able to make our health maintain the standard as we would like for it to be. Are you aware that 5 of these are typically present in breast milk? When women nurse their babies, it makes such a difference in the health of the children. And that's the reason that babies, when they are breastfed, are less likely to have digestive problems, respiratory, ear, or other infections. And the babies have less allergies, eczema, asthma, and generally are far healthier in long-term studies that have been done than those who are not nursed by their mothers. So, from the very first moments of life, these sugars from mother's milk form the basis of our health and our body's ability to heal. They are called glyconutrients, and these monosaccharides work hard at regulating, defending, protecting, and repairing our bodies every single day. Now, how do we get these sugars? Well, they come through fruits and vegetables that we eat. And what I'd like to do, I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, DelphiInternational.com, and I want you to go to the left side of the screen. And you'll find a button that says glyconutrients. I want you to tap that button, and up will pop a page of information. And in that page of information, there are a couple of websites that you can do further research on if you so desire, and I invite you to do that. But I'd like for you to empower yourself. I'd like for you to empower your understanding about how you can be better in your own health positioning and for those that you love. Friends or family, it makes a difference. A new world of information could be at your fingertips. Why don't you explore it? Go into my website, DelphiInternational.com. Take a peek. You won't regret it. Just peruse through, too. Look at some other things if you like. Glyconutrients. You're going to be hearing more and more about this in the coming years. There are over 60 pages of literature published each day regarding this. I invite you to check it out. And if you have any questions, just give me a call. And by the way, you can always reach me at my office. I know there are those of you that have been contacting me via email, which I really appreciate. And that's, if you'd like to do the same thing, you can do it through my website, DelphiInternational.com, or you can also just send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and I'll be happy to respond to it for you. I'm always interested in stories, in recipes, and good things that you would like to share. It does make a difference. So be sure that you do that, because I would love to hear from you. It's always a pleasure. Now, I know that I promised you yesterday some recipes, and these, I'm going to share 2 with you today. And the reason that I'm doing this is because they're both short. One's a sweet recipe, chocolate caramel nut bars. And I want to share, this was sent to me by Cynthia. didn't have a chance to get to it yesterday doing the show, so I wanted to do it with you today. Cynthia Betts is the lady that has shared the recipes with me, and here are the ingredients. Now, there's a little bit of a story with this recipe for the chocolate caramel nut bars, and she said it's called rat poison. It's a big joke in her family, and I thought, well, that's a bit atrocious, you know, calling a recipe a rat poison. But she said it's called rat poison because her Girl Scout leader used it to make it for adults when they went camping, and we'd ask, what are you eating? And the kids were always told by the adults, rat poison, in an effort to keep the kids away. But she said when we figured out what they were doing, it didn't make any difference what they called it. We were going to get some. Now, here is the recipe. It's so easy. It's one package, 14-ounce package of caramel. And all you have to do is buy the bag and take the caramels out of their wrappings. There's usually about 48 per package. So you need one package, 14-ounce of caramels. You're going to need one 5-ounce can of evaporated milk. That's a small can. One 5-ounce can of evaporated milk. One package, and this is of a German chocolate cake mix, and you want the standard package of German chocolate cake mix because that's what's best. Don't buy a smaller package. Just get the standard package. You're going to need a half a cup of butter, and that butter should be melted. You need 1.5 cups of chopped walnuts or almonds, and again, 1.5 cups of chopped almonds or walnuts, and 1 cup of chocolate chips. Now, this is how easy this recipe is. You melt the caramels with 1/3 cup of evaporated milk. Melt the caramels with 1/3 cup of evaporated milk, and you stir it frequently. And you want to do this over low heat, please. It's good if it's done in a heavier pan, not in a real thin tin pan. You want a heavy pan, because you don't want this to burn. You want it to melt and to blend. And then what you do, while that is happening on a very low heat, you want to also mix the remaining evaporated milk with the cake mix and melted butter in a large bowl. So just go ahead, put the mix in the bowl, put the butter, put the milk, and let the beater do its job. Then what you want to do is have a 13-by-9-inch baking pan prepared, and you want to spray it with a nonstick cooking spray. You want to put half of the cake mix that's been with the milk and the butter, you want to put half of that into the bottom of the 13-by-9-inch baking pan. Now, the oven should have been preheated. I should have said this first, but I didn't, to 350 degrees. Now, you put in that mixture into the pan. You bake what's in that pan for 8 minutes at 350 degrees. That's all it is, just 8 minutes. And then you take your 1 cup of your nuts and 1/2 cup of the chocolate chips. Now, when you take that out of the oven, you mix your nuts and chocolate chips over this baked crust. And then you top it with the melted caramel mix, and you spread it well to make sure that every part of this piece of cake that has been baked is covered. And then you top it with spoonfuls, little chunks of the cake mix, the remaining nuts, and the chips. And then you put it back in the oven. You bake it for 18 minutes at 350 degrees, and you let it cool a little bit before cutting. Finger licking good. Okay, that's one of the recipes Cynthia sent me. The other one, and this is an artichoke chili dip. And this is so easy, but I'm telling you, people are just going to love this. If you like to have parties and you want to have vegetable munchies or crackers or things like this, this is so easy and it's got good flavor. What you do, you take a can of artichokes. And these are the artichokes in water. You'll take 1 small can of chopped green chilies. If you want it spicy, then get the spicier kind, but you want just 1 small can. You need 1 cup of mayonnaise and 1 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. Let me repeat that. 1 can, regular 15-ounce can of water-covered artichokes, 1 small can of chopped green chilies, 1 cup of mayonnaise, and 1 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. That's all you need. You want to drain and chop your artichokes, and if there's any tough leaves in those artichokes, you want to get rid of those. You want to drain your can of chilies. You put the 2 ingredients in a large bowl along with your cup of mayonnaise and your cup of grated Parmesan cheese, and just take a nice spatula and just mix them up thoroughly. Put it into a casserole dish. Just sprinkle it with a little bit of paprika if you'd like to have some color on there. Maybe just put in a few nicely slivered pieces of red bell pepper, just for color decoration. You bake this concoction at 350 degrees until it's bubbling at the edges and browned on the top. So you're going to have to watch it, depending on what kind of a pan you put it in. If you put it in a smaller pan, it might take a little bit longer. But just remember, it needs to be bubbling at the edges and browned on the top. And you serve it when it's hot. You serve it with crackers or bread or even veggies, your raw veggies. And what Cynthia said she likes to do, she likes to take bread and toast it in the broiler. And she brushes the bread with some olive oil and then sprinkles on a little bit of Parmesan cheese just to give it that color and extra cheesy flavor. And she said when she made this for a cast party after a play, she made it a quadruple portion. And she said it just was so inexpensive to fix, and everybody absolutely loved it. So you can double this, triple this, quadruple it, whatever you want to do. Just remember, the ingredients are so easy and so tastily easy to prepare, and it will be the hit of any party that it's served at, and especially if you've got potlucks. There's so many people that like to do that. Donna Sebo here. You're listening to the Hour of Mind Power. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, here is a toll-free number. And by the way, it's an international number. No matter where you are, you can call in at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or even 888-268-4313. Now, I want to let you know, tomorrow is going to be Open Mic Day. And Mother's Day is coming up, so we're going to be focusing a little bit on that tomorrow. But on Thursday, we're going to be talking to John Clifton out of New York, and he has a fabulous story, and this is about Sparky. This is a little terrier who is absolutely incredible. He had lymphoma when he was 6 years old. He is now 12. He was cured of lymphoma. You're not going to want to miss this story. Then, if you have conflicting environments in your working in place and you just go, oh, I don't know how I can tolerate this anymore. I just don't know what to do about it. Well, you're going to want to hear my guest, Anna Maravellis. This lady has written a book on how to overcome workplace conflict. She has just got so much wonderful information to share. You're not going to want to miss a bit of it. And then, next week coming up, we're going to be talking about Magical Mac. Magical Mac is a horse that did a lot of work with healing children with difficulties. Michelle Davis is going to be my guest next week, and then we're going to be talking with Milo about how you can sink or swim when it comes to the working marketplace. And this is insightful information. Going out for a job, well, you know, a lot of people that get jobs are fired within a short period of time. Why? Because they don't understand how to make sure that they do what they need to do for themselves. Also, we're going to be talking with Gina Grip about baking with Splenda. This is a sugar substitute, and we have some wonderful recipes to share with you. And then also Carol Frank is going to be an upcoming guest. Do as I say, not as I did. You know, people often say, do as I say, not as I do. Well, these are stories about people that have some real special things to share with you. Donna Sebo here. This is an Hour of Mind Power. If you would like to chat with me today, then just give me a buzz at 877-876-5227, and I'd be delighted to share my intuitive insights with you during this hour. And remember, we're on Monday through Friday right here at bbsradio.com, and soon you're going to be able to go into bbsradio.com. You can go in, look for the Donna Sebo Show. There's a listing of all the show hosts on the side of the screen. You'll find my show, The Donna Sebo Show. You'll be able to go to the beautiful page that they've put up with information about me. And we're also going to be having shortly information about each of the guests that come on. And it is just a delight to be able to bring all of these people to you because they are significant individuals. They each have something special they want to share. And it's my positioning and my belief that every one of us have something to offer. And these people have really done a nice job in publishing books and in getting their information and knowledge out into the world that makes our world a better place. And that's what this show is all about, empowering you as a difference. Now, I know earlier I had mentioned to you about glyconutrients, and I want to bring it up again because this is something that for me, in my mind, that's so important. And it's because nutrition is at the base of health. When you are not healthy, you're going to get sick. You know the story about scurvy. Sailors died by the tens of thousands hundreds of years ago because, and actually not that many hundreds of years ago, because they didn't understand about vitamin C. Once someone figured that out and they made the announcement, do you know it was 40 years before they started implementing having limes on ships and having those things that would prevent scurvy? Sometimes medical wisdom is a little bit slow in catching up with reality. Well, we all try to eat right. We want to make sure we give our families good food. Well, glyconutrients are a leading edge of nutritional technology and science. What they're all about are sugars that are present in nature, but we're really not getting them in the food that we're eating today to the degree that we should. And scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for immune system function and good, healthy cellular development. And over 20,000 studies have been conducted every year on glycoforms alone, and these are the sugar protein structures that line each and every cell within our body. And 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication, and they tell how these sugars work in the body. Now, I like to think that every day I'm presenting information to you on one level or another that's going to empower you. And I want to invite you to go to my site, please. Go to DelphiInternational.com. Put the glyconutrients button that's on the left side of the screen. Go to that page of information. Read it. And if it intrigues you, there's a couple of other websites that are listed there. I want to invite you again. Go and research this. Just don't take my word for it. Go and find out about it. Now, MIT Technology Review, that was put out in February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my glyconutrients page on my website, DelphiInternational.com, and I think it'll make a difference for you, just like it has for myself, for my family, and for my friends. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 877-876-5227 or 888-268-4313. That's 888-268-4313. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I like to know where you are calling from. So give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Jurassic Park. Wow, that was such a dynamic movie. I don't know about you, but I was really intrigued with it. One, I always like special effects anyway. I just am fascinated with what they're able to do in film. But there was so much about Jurassic Park that brought out a lot of information, scientific information, that made us very much aware of how valuable research can be. And there's a new fossil that has been found with the tail of a beaver and the teeth of a seal and the habits of a platypus. Mm-hmm. I love platypuses. I think they're just adorable. They're so unique. Well, this brand new fossil that's been discovered shows that early mammals were far more advanced and adventurous than we thought. Big surprise. Well, technology and all kinds of things are enabling us to research things we didn't have an opportunity to research before. And I think this is really, really fascinating. Now, previously, there were some Jurassic mammals that were miniature mice that we feel probably were dodging the footsteps of dinosaurs, and they would eat insects and worms that were at night out roaming around. Now, the Castacada, and there is another name that goes along with this, which is about a mile and a half long, is 10 times as big as any other known mammal from that time, was different, and that's this new fossil. It was hunting fish in the Inner Mongolian lakes and rivers, and there is a Chinese researcher at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, Mr. Luo. He said it was a giant among all of the midgets. Very interesting description. And they have found that this ancient fossil, and I've got a picture of it in front of me, was equipped with webbed feet for paddling And it took to the water 164 million years ago, to the best of their knowledge, and it would beat the next mammalian swimmer by 100 million years. How can you wrap your mind about that kind of a time frame? Pretty tough, isn't it? It also had hallmarks of modern mammals, including hair and sweat glands. In fact, the presence of the sweat glands is a strong clue that the females were able to nurse their young. And Mr. Luo says, because mammary glands are essentially sweat glands that secrete nutritious excretion, this discovery supports the emerging view that the mammals were already an important part of Earth's menagerie tens of millions of years before dinosaurs left this Earth of ours. And you know, the platypus, that's how they feed their babies. Their skin excretes all of this real rich milk, and the babies lick the milk off of the fur. Platypus, boy, they're just fascinating animals. Not only they're cute as they can be, they're so weird looking, they're adorable, but they have all of these fascinating aspects about them that most of us don't even pay 10 cents worth of time to. Science is great, and if you have children, if you yourself are interested in this and you're around young people, I think it's wonderful to provoke their desire to be curious and to stimulate them and encourage them to go to school, to stimulate and encourage them to go and ask questions and to research information. Curiosity is such a wonderful part of life, and I think so often as we mature, we sort of stuff it in our mental back pockets and sit on it all the time, instead of looking at life with eyes wide open and enthusiastic and going, I wonder if we did this. It makes such a difference when you're curious. I like to do that in the kitchen. Boy, you should see some of the recipes that I've come up with. The only ones that usually end up eating some of them are the crows out in the backyard, and they have to be pretty hard up. But if you don't try, if you don't experiment, how are you going to know if something works or not? And it is absolutely amazing. I've come up with some fabulous things, and I've come up with some real duds. But it's curiosity that makes life interesting. Well, I know we're just about out of time, and I want to be sure to give out my office number because I've had some inquiries, people wanting to know how to reach me. First, I want to say, tell your friends about the show. I know there's been many people that have said, gee, Donna, we want to know how we can find out about your show. Go tell them that they can get me on the Internet at bbsradio.com, bbsradio.com. And the shows are also archived. Also, if you wanted to reach me on a private level, you can call my 800 number, which is 872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. And I will be glad to give you any information that you would like, whether it's about private sessions, whether it's about guests coming up on the show. If you have something special you'd like to share, then always, too, remember my email is available, donna@delphiinternational.com. Well, I know we're just about out of time here. It has been wonderful sharing this hour with you. Tell your friends about the show and know that you'll always be able to call in and chat with me if you so desire. But remember always, too, you're the master of your or the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. And tomorrow is going to be an open mic day, so the telephone lines will be open for the entire hour. And just enjoy this day to the fullest because it is so filled with gifts for you. The only way you're going to be able to even know what's in that package of life is to take off the ribbon and take off the lid and peer into it and say, what's there for me today? Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Have a great day.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.